Testing, testing, 1, 2, 3. This is my voice under the blanket. How does it sound now?
Welcome to The Willing Fool, episode 6. I'm your host and lead fool, Paul Trimble. We are here to bring honor to that which is honorable, to show worth to that which is worthy. We're here to journey together, to expend ourselves in pursuit of wisdom that is valuable. We believe that the inner journey is valuable and of great worth. The pursuit of wisdom and honor is itself honorable. And that we're on this pilgrimage, which is a time-honored tradition of searching for truth, searching for wisdom, even when it may not be convenient, it may not be rewarded in the near term, that is a worthy journey into unknown territory. For us, that territory might be our interior, an inner journey. Part of that journey means that we have to risk being a fool, hence the name of the podcast, The Willing Fool. We have to risk being willing to be a fool, to realize that maybe we know a little bit less than we thought, that our certainties we may not be so certain about, that maybe we know less than we've given ourselves credit for. That can be a healthy and a good thing. We can actually learn, become wiser, the more we recognize that we are something of a beginner, having that beginner's mind. And I want to encourage you with that today, because that's part of what we're all about. You might think, okay, well, what's the big deal? What's so hard about that? Isn't that just cereal box wisdom? Isn't that just a truism? And I don't think so, because there is a necessary tension that's at work, I think, at the individual level, the group level, even the cultural level, between this pressure to adapt, to innovate, to evolve, and also a pressure to conserve, to maintain what is in the status quo. A lot of times you see this tension play out between generations, a younger generation coming of age and realizing that maybe their parents and the older generation do not have all the answers, and they have something to say and begin to critique and wonder, is there any wisdom in the generation above me and what they've done? Let's throw it all out and start over. You can see it when it comes to politically and culturally. There's almost always this tension, these two opposite poles of what we have is good. Let's preserve it. Let's make sure that we retain what is great about what we have developed over time. And then there's the opposite pole, the pressure to make things much better, to see what isn't good, what needs to be transformed, what needs to be changed, what needs to be shaken up. When we hear conservative, we might think instantly negative. That's buttoned up. That's averse to change. Where we might think that being conservative means a person is afraid of change. And that, of course, that can be true. That's possible. But let's take a moment here to acknowledge the why, the reason that a person might be of a conservative nature, a conservative bent. And I'm not just talking about politically, but it can include that. The word conservative, if you think about it, has a clue about its meaning that we don't think about too often, in that if you are conservative, you have a tendency or a bias to want to conserve. Think about what conserve means. At a basic level, conserve means to preserve what is good, to save or to keep. As in, if somebody is a conservationist, they want to preserve and keep safe and healthy and thriving what already is. And we usually use that term as it pertains to nature, animals, or landscapes, or ecosystems. The idea of being a conservationist in that arena is, look at what is beautiful and already is and is thriving. Let's just not mess that up. Let's just keep that good and as it is. And it's a little bit interesting and funny in our culture that somebody who's politically not conservative is probably more likely to be a conservationist, and vice versa. Maybe not always, but that's a little bit interesting. Or we can think from a perspective of how our bodies work. Over time, we know biologically, our bodies and our DNA works to preserve forms and structures that have worked in the past. And so even if there is innovation, it is usually built upon structures and forms that have existed for a very, very long time. And that just makes sense because if something, let's say, has worked fairly well for a million years, you don't want to just go throw it in the dumpster heap, the rubbish bin of history. You might want to keep that because it's earned its right to be there in a sense. And yeah, maybe you tweak, maybe you add on or just change slightly, but you probably don't want to start over from scratch. If you start over, the odds are you are going to die. And everybody who gets that body plan or that change is going to die is the most likely outcome. Not to mention, to make a huge change requires a lot of energy and a lot of things to make that happen the right way. And so we don't have unlimited energy. We don't have unlimited natural resources, even when we're talking about just physical bodies. And so adapting and changing and regrowing, all those things require a lot of energy. So you can't grow and change in every direction at the same time. That's just not energy efficient. There isn't enough resources and energy to go around. And so if there are going to be changes, it needs to be thoughtful and selective to some degree. And we know not just our bodies, but our minds work this way too. The way our minds are made, they're constantly oversimplifying what we can perceive so that we're not trying to take in too much information at once. We are always simplifying. We're using our memory. We have spatial memory. We have functional memory about routines that we do. Once we have done something a certain amount of times, we don't have to think consciously about that because we just streamlined it down to something very simple. We conserve energy. It's the way our bodies are made. It's the way our minds are made. So there is a real impulse behind the desire, the bias, the tendency to conserve. I think that's just good to be aware of because if you're somebody that tends towards the opposite end, you can think of conservative as just bad or evil or resistant or curmudgeonly or whatever other negatively connotated adjective you want to think of. And that's just not true. There is part of reality that really begs for conservatism of one type or another. And so if somebody's bent that way, their bias is that way, there may be a decent reason for that. And now let's consider the drive to change, to adapt, to innovate. Likewise, for somebody maybe who's on the more conservative end of things by nature, one can look at somebody who's always looking to change or innovate or adapt or transform and think, don't you appreciate what has gone before? Are you just here to trash everything that has been so valuable to us, that has worked, that has gotten us to this point, that we worked so hard to develop? Are you just here to make everything worse, to tear down with your hands? And there can be fear of unknown and making things worse. I mean, that makes sense. That is a reasonable fear to have. If you think about fears and why they develop, even if you don't agree with the fear as a way of life or as a conclusion or place to land, you might be able to understand that there is a reasonable basis for that fear. If you think about germophobes, people who are wildly afraid of germs and infections, well, that's not completely baseless, is it? Even if it's something that is a little exaggerated or cramps somebody's ability to live, there is a real danger of germs, of viruses, of microscopic things that invade and infect us. Or if you think about xenophobia, fear of outsiders and strangers, not a good way to live and just philosophy of life. But throughout the course of history, human history, there's probably been a reason to be suspect of new people that you're not aware of or familiar with coming into frame, because of course there's been plenty of times when people have attacked one another. So as soon as you meet new people, there's a chance it could be good, there's a chance it could be neutral, and it's a chance that they're coming to kill you. So once again, even if you don't land there as this is a good way to live, you can understand at least a basis of where somebody would be coming from with a fear like that. So there's great reason to acknowledge that the impulse to change and transform is legitimate and necessary for surviving and thriving as well. Just as we talked about, there's a biological argument and a logical argument for conservatism. There is a biological and logical argument for change and adaptation. On the biological side, just as nature works to preserve and conserve what has gone before that has worked over a long period of time and has been very successful towards helping species reproduce, survive, propagate, all of that, the same thing applies to change. Because there's always this force at work about creating new possibilities, creating diversity. Even within a species, you might think, okay, a species, well, that's one blueprint, right? And everybody's the same. Well, no, I mean, there's diversity among species, between species, and then there's diversity also even within species. And the way even DNA gets mixed and matched with reproduction produces this constant fountain, this constant wellspring of diversity, of new combinations that didn't exist before. And this is not to mention mutation that also produces variety and diversity. And so the idea is diversity itself is necessary for the survival of creatures, for the survival of species. Even if you thought that you could have the optimal individual, the optimal design or blueprint, it would be a failing strategy for each member of a species or subspecies to get that blueprint. And so the idea is the optimal approach is not to have one optimal, one size fits all plan and pattern, but instead to have a variety of blueprints in play at all times. And that way, no matter what situations change and occur, you have some different strategies, some different approaches available that can help the species, in this case, move forward. That's very interesting because I think the default thinking we have a lot of times is, what is the best? What is the optimal? And then everything and everybody should be that thing. And this point, my point is, that is actually not even a good approach overall. You want diversity, and you even want some of this tension that we're talking about. The very fact that there is tension between generally conservative approach and a generally change adaptive oriented approach, that tension is good. The diversity of people with bents in one direction or another is good. Even if you think you're the smartest person on earth and everybody should think like you, if you think about this, you can have the awareness that it actually would not be good if everyone thought exactly like you. Even if you are the smartest person on earth, you simply need some variety. You need people that are in different places on that spectrum. So the impulse to conserve and remain the same or retain what is good and helpful, and the impulse to change and transform and adapt, are both opposite poles of attention that is required to promote and sustain life. For us, what does that mean? That means we should be really careful not to demonize, devalue, or oversimplify either one of those impulses, but to honor them and respect them. And that's true politically, culturally, generationally, religiously, philosophically. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to agree with somebody. It does not mean that. But it does mean you can have some respect and appreciation and understanding from where the impulse comes from, the impulse to conserve, the impulse to transform. Even if you think it's misapplied, you can appreciate the reason for the impulse. If you think about it, I think I made this point in a previous podcast, but wherever you are on the spectrum, if you're tend toward a liberal way of thinking, change-oriented way of thinking, or a conservative way of thinking, preserve what is good, you probably are aware, either really and practically or just hypothetically, that there's someone that's more extreme than you. If you're a liberal, you can probably pick out some person that you've ever seen or heard from where you thought, okay, wow, you know, I'm on the same page with you, but at the same time, you're being very extreme. For example, if somebody's just saying everything in society is evil and corrupted and needs to be completely flipped on its head, you might say, well, I don't think that. There are some good things. We don't need to overthrow literally every aspect of society. And that person could look at you as a coward or very milquetoast or wishy-washy or something. But you might be looking at them thinking, no, I think you're just a little extreme, even though you share that bent towards change, being an agent of change. Or on the other hand, exact same thing on the other side. If you're a conservative person by nature, but you're aware there is a group or a person that's to the right of you or farther on the extreme than you, and you might say to something that person would say, man, we share some common ground, but you sound like a neo-Nazi. You sound like a supremacist or just a curmudgeon who thinks that everything new is bad and we need to somehow rewind the clock to whatever, the 1800s or the Middle Ages. Not everything new is an abomination or an outrage. There are things that can come about that are new that are good. And so you can have this awareness that there is always somebody more extreme than you, looking at you and thinking maybe you're being not conservative enough if you're conservative, or not liberal enough or change-oriented enough if you're liberal or change-oriented, which should tell you that this tension is real and there is legitimacy about both of these poles, these two poles, and that both of their impulses need to be considered. Would you want to live in a world where there was only one of those? It would probably be simpler, I suppose, maybe less tension and less arguments, but would it be the best place? Would that be the best scenario? To me, people earn credibility when they acknowledge that there is at least tension inherent in these two impulses, and particularly on the other side of the spectrum than they might be on a particular issue. If they can vouch for or give some acknowledgement of the credibility of the impulse from the other side. Instead, what happens more often is people just double down or triple down on their own position, on the side they're on, the one they've already chosen, and refuse to acknowledge any power of argument or legitimacy of the other side, of the other impulse. And that is not to say that both sides are equally right in every case, or that both sides have an equally wise application of a particular argument, just that there is room for the actual tension that does exist. So it's just a general framework of thinking and understanding that there is likely to be tension in most arenas that we could look at, and that isn't necessarily a bad thing or a flaw, but instead can be part of a good design, actually, a good balance or approach as a whole. At the same time, this podcast is called The Willing Fool, and we've emphasized that perhaps the best approach is to be always willing to re-examine, to reconsider, to examine things that we may think we already have the answers to or are certain, and see, is there room for a change? Is there room for improvement? You've probably heard of the idea of growth mindset, to be constantly seeking to learn, to grow, to be matured and transformed. And the idea of a growth mindset is, I don't have to have all the perfect answers. I don't have to be insanely smart or insanely talented or competent. What's more important is my approach. Am I always willing to learn? Am I willing to practice and increase my competence or my knowledge or my skill? And I have an image that I think is very attractive of a life well lived that includes evolving constantly, even into and through old age, right to the point of death. Imagine living that way, that through your old age, should you be gifted enough to live to a ripe old age, and you are constantly changing and transforming and growing in a good way. I have to imagine that's part of the proper aim of a life. Not having a mindset of success and perfection. And what a relief that is if you can let go of the idea that you have to have success and perfection. But I am willing to grow. I am willing to change. Even though I can say it's a proper aim of a life, that doesn't mean it's going to be easy. I think to have that mindset makes a person vulnerable. There is a feeling of weakness that comes with it, or acknowledging failures or shortcomings. And of course, there can be obstacles with that. There can be resistance from within. We can have a fear of living that way, or discomfort with, well, if I'm constantly having to reevaluate, when do I ever know that I'm standing on just completely solid ground that isn't going to shake or tremor or move under me? Am I always going to have to be wrestling with dealing with something that may be new or unknown or different? And then just the feeling of uncertainty or vulnerability that goes with that. And if we're pretty fragile, that can feel like a pretty serious ego threat, to the point that it might feel like that threatens my very existence. For those of us who are on the religious side, I think that fear can be wrongly dealt with using religion, using dogma. It can serve as a cover for us, because if I'm filled with this sense of certitude, the sense of certainty and rightness, that I have the answers, the best answers that anybody has, then that's a pretty decent reason to not think, to not reflect, to not question, or even assess myself against new information that's coming in. And if we're using religion, we're using dogma to self-protect against fear, against ego threat, the threat of ego death, that is a coping mechanism. That's not healthy. That's not what good religion does. That's not what religion well practiced does. It doesn't always confirm the status quo. It doesn't suppress self-reflection and depth and searching. It doesn't work against change consistently. And so if this is happening for you or your group or your subgroup or whatever, if that's a dynamic at play, you may be worshiping not the God that you say you worship, but you may be worshiping your own sense of certainty and your own sense of control. In a sense, you're worshiping yourself and the control that you want more than anything else. I don't think it's bound only to the religious, though. Maybe there's a different flavor where if you take a strong stance and say, well, I'm not religious, I'm anti-religious, nobody has a claim on me, no God has a claim on me, no people have a claim on me, there is no mystery, there is no authority beyond myself, there's no boundaries to me, and I do what I want, I'm a free, completely free agent, I'm above it all. Well, that too could be a form of worshiping your own self and seizing your own sense of control and certainty. So perhaps even a non-religious person could use their absence of belief as a shield, as a cover for not being open to being challenged. These labels, these identities we have, they can be coverings to prevent more serious self-reflection or needed change. And regardless of which one we're talking about, neither one is particularly admirable. So for you, whether you consider yourself religious, not religious, anti-religious, whatever, we need to be appreciative of a conservative understanding and mindset. The idea to preserve what is good. And also, we need to have a bias toward adaptive change, a growth mindset. We've got to be willing to be a fool, to unlearn, to have a beginner's mind, to not know things, if we want to be healthy and thriving. That's the thought for the day. Be willing to be a fool. Appreciate the conservative. Preserve what is best. But always be willing to look and see what is new. What needs to be different? How can I grow? What needs to be challenged in myself, in my thinking, in my life? That's it for The Willing Fool, episode 6. Thanks for being here. See you next time.